Welcome to Massage Therapy Radio. I'm your host, Jim Smythe, and this week's topic is Stop Losing Time, Money, and Energy on Bad Business Agreements. Tonight's seminar is part of the series 12 Weeks with Better Massage Business produced by MT coach Don Dillon. Don Dillon is an RMT and is the author of Better Business Agreements and Charting Skills for Massage Therapists. He's presented in Alberta, Saskatchewan, Ontario, and New Brunswick. Over 50 of his articles have been printed in industry publications, including Massage Therapy Canada, Massage Therapy Today, the AMTA Journal, the AMTWP Connections, and various massage school and professional association newsletters. Welcome to the show, Don.
Thanks, Jim. I'm very glad to be here on this almost spring day.
Well, we're very glad to have you, and I would disagree with the almost spring day. It's a pile of snow as I look out the window.
I'm hopeful.
Yes, I think we all are. Don, you wanted to talk about five misconceptions that you commonly hear from massage therapists regarding business agreements. So what would be the first misconception that you'd like to speak to?
Well, you know, Jim, I've had a lot of feedback. I mean, the whole reason I wrote the book initially was I was getting a lot of questions from mostly clinic managers, but a lot of therapists about business agreements and how to set up financial terms that were fair and amenable. And what I have found and have heard is that massage therapists seem to loathe creating agreements. They love working together. They love the idea of working together and supporting each other, but they seem to hate working out the agreement terms that they have to work through. And what's more, what I have found is that a lot of them have received some well-meaning but poor advice from perhaps other clinic owners or from past school instructors, models that really weren't financially supportive. And really, having a bad agreement can cost thousands of dollars to the clinic manager if it's actually costing money to have an associate rather than generating income from them. And for the associate who has to relocate and set up a new practice if something doesn't work out, it's a very expensive venture not to have a good agreement in place. I've also received emails from individuals where they didn't have any agreement at all in place. They really jumped in, expected the best, hoped things would turn out well, and unfortunately that's often a case for disaster because things when the honeymoon is over, the things get a little sour. So it's really important. I want to just to tell everybody who's out there listening tonight and to our subsequent replay that it's really important to have a good agreement in place. Some of the first misconception I'd like to talk about is I hear the point from a practitioner that I'm paying too much rent, or from the clinic manager side, how much rent should I be charging? I'm not charging enough rent. And I think that probably therapists imagine I get a lot of questions from therapists who are out there working in isolation in a chiropractic office or maybe in a massage therapy office, and they're paying too much rent, and it's very oppressive. But the truth is I actually hear it more from clinic managers who bemoan the fact that they're paying far more to work from their own business than their associates are. It seems that clinic managers don't always know how to adequately assess the value of their business to an associate, and they're often undercharging rent. So sometimes the cheapest place you can get rent as an associate is from a massage therapist clinic because they haven't properly set up the financial model in place. And then the associates don't, because they haven't had this experience perhaps running their own business, they don't know how much it costs to run a business. So let's talk about the cost of running a business. There's the lease. There's the office improvements, maybe some paint and reconstruction needs to happen, office furniture, computers, printers, other electronic equipment for providing treatment like massage tables, linen, lubricants. Maybe there's some modalities like ultrasound or TENS or hydrocolator packs. There's the signage and all the marketing materials, the brochures, the business cards, newsletters. In addition to that, there are fees to belong to the professional association, also to the regulatory body for those states and provinces that have regulatory bodies, and local business associations. There's fees to join them as well. Here in Ontario, we have to pay property tax, of course, if you own the building, but GST we have to pay on our massage therapy treatments, and some provinces have to pay the harmonized. I always love when I hear the government call it that, the harmonized tax, where they actually have to pay the government sales tax, the GST, and the provincial sales tax remit on their treatments, and of course all the supplies and services we buy. So it can be very expensive to run a clinic. Myself, I found that last year with two associates, it was costing me about $2,500 a month to run the business. Now, that's $2,500 that I have to pay out before I take any money home for myself. And, Jim, you've got a very large clinic. You've got seven associates. I mean, larger clinics cost even more to run. They have administrative staff, maintenance staff. They have to have bookkeepers, accountants, and lawyers. So it's a very expensive venture, a very big risk.
Absolutely. My clinic costs probably $10,000 a month.
$10,000 a month. That's before you take anything home to feed yourself.
That's before you take anything home. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, when I've asked clinic managers when they're asking me how much to charge, what kind of financial terms, they ask me, well, how much should I charge? I ask them, what do they charge? And they say, well, I charge this amount because someone told me I should charge this or it felt right. You know, we're very intuitive types, we massage therapists, but it's really important that people do the math. And intuition is not a substitute for doing the math when we're figuring out our financial agreements. Another thing I want to mention to clinic managers, because I think clinic managers feel a little bit short on the stick here, is that there are a lot of intangible values that they bring, like location and reputation. It takes a lot of time to establish a location and the reputation of providing good care. In fact, if an associate was to move next door, they wouldn't have the same results because they haven't developed the reputation and the location and the goodwill in that spot that the original clinic manager has done. So you have to put a value as a clinic manager. It's not just the things that are being expensed every day, like the linen and the lubricants and the lease of the building. There are those add-on values that also should be considered when they're designing. Now, in the book Better Business Agreements, I outline a model where a clinic manager can fairly assess the cost of bringing in an associate to ensure that they're covering their expenses and they're making a profit margin. I outline how associates can determine if a potential workplace is right for them as opposed to going it alone. Now, of course, the question that people ask is, what should I charge for rent? There's a lot of numbers out there. What I like to say to clinic managers is what you should charge for rent is what covers all your expenses and makes you a reasonable profit or return on investment for taking a risk and opening a business. For the associate, the fair amount is the amount what your skill and experience brings to the job that covers the business expenses you incur there and gives you enough money to take home.
You're telling me there's no magic number.
No, because there are a lot of situations to consider. If a therapist, and you know this, Jim, because you interview many associates coming into your clinic, if someone has already built up a patient base that is coming with them or they have a specialization, well, they tend to be a lot more valuable as an associate than someone, say, who doesn't have those qualities. So they have some leverage on their side in terms of determining an agreement. You're an established clinic right in downtown Peterborough where you are, so you bring a lot of value as opposed to some business that's going to open up around the corner that's just starting up. So you need to know how much you need to cover your expenses and how much you want to be able to take home to cover your personal expenses, and that's the starting point. And then where you negotiate is looking at the value that each party, the clinic manager and the associate, brings to the table.
I certainly agree, and I've run into situations in the past where a therapist will, you know, decide to move out of the clinic, and they will take a number of clients, but a lot of clients will stay with the clinic because of location, flexibility, how well it works for them. So you don't really lose as many as the therapist thinks they're going to take. So that is also an alternative for clinic manager to keep that in the back of his hip pocket.
Yes. Yeah, I think clinic managers are afraid that half the business is going to walk down the street, and the truth is, you're right, people come to the clinic for a variety of reasons, and sometimes therapists who think the grass is greener on the other side of the fence, they overestimate the amount of business that's going to go with them.
I agree wholeheartedly. Now, what do you think is the second misconception about this process of trying to do business agreements?
Well, this one really gets me. This is where I hear that the clinic owner shouldn't profit from the practice that the associate's bringing in. Basically, the clinic manager should let the associate come in and just cover basically the cost that they're incurring. There shouldn't be any profit made on the part of the clinic manager. And I think this is because of the altruistic nature of our work. We've created a belief that an associate should be able to come in and work at the clinic at just making the costs. However, I want to say to our listeners out there that this is a very unhealthy kind of relationship, and it often engenders resentment and high associate turnover because the clinic manager eventually feels unappreciated, and the associate really doesn't understand the true value of what it costs to have them working there, and so they undervalue it, and then they end up just moving on. I want to give the metaphor that if your brother-in-law moved into your home and they were commandeering your refrigerator and eating your food and taking over your extra bedroom, and yet they were paying you a rent that was far below what it cost you to have them there in terms of their food and the space they were taking up. Maybe it was an apartment that you could be renting to someone else. You know, how long would you tolerate that? Yet clinic managers do this all the time with associates because we haven't learned proper financial models to make sure that the clinic keeps running, the business keeps running, and provides that opportunity for the associate. Really, the associate depends as much as the clinic manager on the business to keep running. And if the business is not sustainable, then both of them are going to be out of a job, although the clinic manager, of course, has much more risk because they've put equity in the business, they've put the time and blood, sweat, and tears. So tremendous loss if those things aren't figured out ahead of time. The business must make a profit. The owner puts in these resources and takes tremendous risk for creating the business. The business becomes an asset, which as the owner decreases their workload over time, you know, the very physically demanding work that we do, so as we want to work less over time, then the business becomes an asset itself and starts generating passive income in the form of associates coming in and being able to work from the goodwill and reputation we've set up. The business also needs capital for expansion, allocating savings during towards retirement and other goals. If any kind of mishaps happen, Jim, I don't hope you don't mind me mentioning this, but I always think of the story with your clinic being on the corner there, that time when there was a car that came through the intersection, ran into your building, and took out one of your clinic rooms. I mean, there was an unexpected circumstance there that you had to make sure you had some capital set aside to cover that kind of problem, didn't you?
Yes, you did. And actually, I didn't really need capital at that point, but I did have to pay for the insurance for a long period of time before it actually paid off because of that accident.
Yeah, and if you were not making profit above just the incurring the expenses of having the associate there, you wouldn't have that money to be able to do that. I mean, as a business owner, why would you take the risk of liability and losing those resources if you weren't getting paid for it? I want all our listeners to take this and write this down. If you're going to take on risk, you should be paid for it. If you can't make a profit and you're not willing to correct the situation you're in with the agreements you have, then I suggest you just might as well close up shop and work at the local spa or go rent space from another practitioner because you're just digging a deep hole for yourself.
I agree. You can see that there's a lot of cost to running a clinic. And if you're not making that profit line, if you're not keeping your eye on it, then you certainly won't have anything at the end of the day. But
yeah.
There are lots of the banks don't turn their head away, and nor do the insurance people or the people, the suppliers that want their monies. You have to pay them on a regular basis. So the flow has to keep rolling.
Yes.
So some people think that straight percentage agreements are the best thing to deal with. What's your view on that?
Well, for a short-term locum, if you had somebody coming in just to cover for maternity leave for a couple months, if it was going to be a very limited relationship, then certainly straight percentage agreements work just fine. However, with long-term relationships, they become problematic because by the very nature, a percentage agreement is variable. Sometimes it covers a month's expenses, and other times it doesn't. For example, if you were to figure out, Jim, that every one of your treatment rooms the operating expenses to cover all your administration and promotion and the utilities and the lease and all the expenses that go into your business. Say it was costing you $1,000 a month for your treatment room. And say that your associate was paying a percentage, and sometimes it was higher, sometimes it was lower, but on average it was coming in at about $800 a month. So who would pocket, whose pocket does that shortfall come out of?
Well, that's a very obvious answer. That would come out of the clinic manager's, their clinic owner's pocket.
Yeah. Mine. Now, some practitioners would argue that they only want to pay for expenses incurred when they work. Why should I pay for the clinic room if I'm not using it? But if they're tying up the room, if the room can't be used by other practitioners, if that can't be, if the shifts can't be broken up where that room can be used, then really that room is dead space. It's not generating any income, so it's costing money anyway. And the analogy I like to say to those practitioners who say they should only pay for the time they're in is that when you go on vacation, you can't call up the mortgage company and say, "Hey, I'm not going to be using my house for 2 weeks. I'm going to be in Florida. Do you mind just knocking off those two mortgage payments? I'm not going to be here to use the house." And of course, the obvious answer is the bank would laugh at you. And the same holds true for the business. Whether you're busy as an associate or not, whether you're there or not, the business is incurring expenses, and it needs to cover those expenses. Now, for associates, percentage-only long-term encourages turnover as well, because it's great as an associate when you're starting out. If you're a percentage-only, hey, the rent's not too bad. But once you get busy and you're working really well, if it's a percentage-only agreement, you start paying a lot of money. And then that office space for lease down the street looks very attractive. So what happens is the clinic manager has a situation where the therapists come in, they're trained in the ways of the clinic, they garner a lot of experience, and they get some a buildup of patient base only for them to leave. And then the associates have to spend a lot of time moving around as well. So for long-term relationships, you really need to have increased accountability on both parties and increased opportunity for financial reward on both sides.
This sounds like you're leading into the fact that you have to look at things from the associate's point of view as well. So does the associate have any leverage in forming an agreement?
Absolutely, Jim. I know I've been talking a lot about clinic managers, and the reason for that is because that's where I've been hearing most of the complaints. But associates have a lot of say in what happens with agreement. It depends on the value that they can bring to the table. If they have skills in attracting and retaining business, that what I mean by that is skills in communication, sales ability, so they know how to talk to people, they know how to find out what they need and how to service those needs, customer service skills. If they have those kind of skills and they can build up a business quickly, well, they're going to bring a lot of value, and the clinic manager is really going to want to keep that associate. Or if they bring technical skills, maybe they have a specialization, they've taken a particular technique that's very valuable, it's recognized in the public, it seems to attract people to come for that specialized kind of treatment. They can charge higher fees because of the skill set that they have. They can serve different markets than the clinic is currently serving, for example, palliative care or pregnancy massage or corporate on-site massage or sports techniques. I mean, anything that the clinic is not currently serving, maybe spa treatments. If the clinic isn't currently serving those individuals, that person can help bring a whole new brand of individual into the clinic and therefore brings a lot of value. So when the contract comes up for negotiation, it's very costly to lose an associate who's made such an impression on you. So you're in a much better position to negotiate for a better rent, or I even think what's best is if you can get an associate, one thing that helps to curb turnover, and we'll talk about this in the next misconception, but profit sharing. Have the associate have an opportunity to share in the profits made by the business.
That's an interesting approach, but if you do that sort of thing, are you sort of challenging the contract status of an individual?
Well, there's some interesting things developing. You may recall our show a few weeks back when I had my accountant on, that Robert Magder, he was saying that Canada Revenue Agency is looking very critically at these relationships. Up to this point, clinic managers have not wanted to bother with the paperwork of filing Canada Pension Plan and employment insurance, and the associates have had to want some flexibility. So in a lot of cases, massage therapists maintain this contractor-client relationship. But there are many things, and I outline this in the book, there are six criteria that Canada Revenue Agency looks at to determine if someone is more an employee status and a contractor. And what they're drawing a conclusion is that in many cases, these therapists are actually more like an employee relationship. Now, there are probably a lot of people out there that are screaming, oh my goodness, now I'm going to have to all of a sudden change things over. I mean, I do outline in the book where the line is and how you can keep it as a contractor relationship, but I want to see there's a lot of positives to making someone an employee. For example, you can mandate training. You can require them to upgrade their skills, where a contractor, you can't really tell them to take courses and upgrade their skills. You can control the resources that are used within your clinic. You can determine, so you can control costs better. You can tell, you can control the hours that an associate works, as opposed to in a contractor status, they really can come and go as they please. They can pick their own hours. And there's no conflict of a dual advertising. I spoke to a therapist a few months back where she has associates working out of her clinic, and they felt because they were a contractor position, they wanted to develop their own visual identity. So within her clinic, they wanted to put up their own signage. They wanted to have their own business cards, their own independent design. So basically they wanted to rent the room from her but put up their own visual identity. Now, how confusing would that be to a client or a patient coming in the door and seeing, well, there's two different kinds of signs, different kinds of business cards? I mean, it gets very confusing. Who's actually working here? What business is this actually? Can you imagine the website and, I mean, newspaper advertising? I mean, very, very confusing. Where if they're an employee, the clinic has a visual identity, a visual presence, and and then all the employees, all the business cards look the same. The uniform is mandated. It all looks the same. It's cut and clean and very clear as to what the business is about. And the great thing that I think a lot of clinic managers miss out on because they hate this turnover. I get these stories from clinic managers. They have these great associates. They build up, and then they move on. Well, if you've got a good employee as an associate, then you can offer bonuses. The ones that don't work out, I mean, you can weed those ones out early on, but the ones that work out really well, you can offer them profit sharing where they actually benefit. If the clinic does really well, say a certain financial marker in the year, then everybody benefits. Everybody gets a piece of that success that comes over. So I think making someone an employee is one of the best ways to control some of that, one of the primary problems clinic managers have, which is turnover. So I just want to say to all the clinic managers out there, create the kind of business that you would like to work in and provide that business for your associates.
But if you've got a bad contract therapist that's working for you, you can weed those out just as easily as a bad employee can,
yes. Yes, you can end that at any time, absolutely. But I find because the relationship seems to be a little, it almost seems like therapists try to do a hybrid where they have someone come in and they want to dictate their hours and dictate their uniform and they want to dictate all those variables, but they want to keep them as a contractor. So they say, you must do this, this, and this to work here, but you're a contractor. And so the contractor then has the freedom to come and go as they please. They can work in other clinics. I've heard situations where therapists work in two clinics, and sometimes they send patients from one clinic to the other clinic. So that primary clinic, of course, doesn't make any income off of that. So there's a confusion in the relationship that exists, and I think what needs to happen very clearly is you have to decide, is it going to be an employee-employer relationship or a contractor-client? And if it's contractor, by nature, it's a temporary short-term relationship. So you just have to get used to having high turnover as a clinic manager if you want to maintain that kind of structure.
Okay, but you're also talking about mandating training for an employee, for example. But
yeah,
we have a professional body, in fact, a college, that dictates you have to take so much training. Are you saying
yes,
that you should take more training than that?
But you have a lot of variability in what you train in there. where, for example, there are some institutions in the States where they set up training programs for the employees, the employee practitioners, so that the practitioners are doing exactly what they need to do in order to provide service and that care. So for example, if you could take a course in, maybe you work in a sports clinic, but you could take a course in something completely unrelated, maybe palliative care, for example, because you're interested in, that has nothing to do with the application of the clinic you're working in. You have that freedom to do so. But as an employer, you can say, well, you need some sports-specific massage therapy training. We're going to send you off to this workshop, get you training in that workshop so that you can come back and provide better service to our clients or our patients.
So you're saying you have a little more control in an
yes.
employee-employer relationship.
Employer-employer really dictates more control. Contractor-clients gives you more flexibility in terms of ending agreements, but you lose a lot of control. Like the story I mentioned where the person, the associate can come in and have their own visual identity. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me just go to a question from the audience. I've got Paul here from Toronto, and his question is, what is your preference of approach, contractor or employee-employer?
Well, I personally have used a contractor relationship for many years, but what I didn't realize, and it was part of my research into creating the book, was that it really wasn't a model that was serving me well, because I would train associates, they would do really well, and they get to a certain point, and then they would go and open their own businesses. So it seemed to be like my clinic became this training ground in many ways. So I, at this point, I've changed my relationship where I've moved my practice into home, and I currently don't have any associates. I work on my own. But if I was to open up a clinic again, I would go with an employee-employer model.
Okay. So that's your preference of style.
Yeah.
And do you have any feel, another question from Toronto again, a gentleman by the name of Peter, do you have an idea of what an average cost it would take to run for a therapist for a month? Like, is there a baseline or a percentage that works better than most?
Well, like I said, that's entirely specific to the situation. The clinic manager has to figure out what their operating costs. That's the first thing they have to do, and I outlined that in the chapter under financial intelligence in the book. They have to know what it costs them to run each treatment room. So if they have three treatment rooms, they have to look at all their operating expenses, and they have to take it by a third because, you know, the bathroom doesn't generate any income, the waiting area doesn't generate income. The treatment rooms have to be divided into a third. So they have to get that number, and then they have to think about what kind of profit margin they would like to have. It might be 10%, 20%, 50%. So that's the number that they start, and that's what they have to work with. The associate, the person who would be associating, comes in. They have to look at what their skills and abilities are. Do they have the ability to start their own business? If not, and most of us don't, then they really need to look at associating somewhere. So they have to look at various workplace situations, find out what's being offered, the equipment that's being provided, the amenities. Is it just a straight lease the room kind of thing and you have to provide your own table and all your services, or is something provided? Is there administration? Do they have a secretary? All of those things have to be factored and given a scale in terms of what's important to you. If you're new out of school, if you don't have any business background, it's probably best that you pay a higher rent to get the reception services, to work with other practitioners where there might be overflow traffic, where the equipment is provided so you don't have to pay for it. It's a much better situation for you as a new therapist. If you're a seasoned therapist, you've got some of your own equipment, you've got a practice base build up behind you, well, then you can look for a place that doesn't have all the services because you can negotiate a lower rent because you don't need all of those things. So I would not say there's any way to apply a circumstance to any situation. The underlying fundamentals are, as a clinic manager, meet your operating expenses and a return on investment so that you can cover your costs. And as an associate, you have to assess what you can afford to pay out in operating costs and what you need to take home to survive on. So I would completely obliterate. I know there's some percentages thrown out there, everything from, you know, 80 to 20% all the way down to Some of the spas here in Niagara, it's about 30-35% goes to the therapist, and 65-70% goes to the house. So it's completely reliant on the situation you're in and the value you're being provided. So look around, do some shopping around, and self-assess and see what you can honestly bring to the table. I think many therapists make the mistake of overestimating their ability to build a business on their own.
I think you're right. I very much agree with that point. Now, Don, we have a door prize to offer tonight. So before I go to the audience to let them know how they can win this door prize, do you want to tell us what it is?
Yes. Well, it's a copy of the book we've been talking about tonight, Better Business Agreements. It's a book I wrote back in late 2005. Some of the things included in the book include 5 steps to increase your financial intelligence, the true cost of running your business. We talked a lot about that tonight. Determining if your business is sustainable, and looking at 3 factors to make sure that your revenue is covering. I talk about 3 strategies for clinic managers who discover that their agreements, in fact, are not financially sustainable and they need to change them. I talk about how to discover how to maximize your facilities and generate more passive income. I talk about why straight percentages don't work. I talk to associates. I show them how to assess their options out there to make sure that where they're looking to locate is going to be a good fit for them. I talk about a 4-point method to negotiate better business agreements, so we actually give a negotiation model. I talk about discerning how Canada Revenue Agency can make your life absolutely miserable if you incorrectly classify the type of work relationship that you're having. And the book actually includes a contract checklist and an actual legally reviewed contract. People that purchase the book and register their copy of the book with MT Coach will receive a Microsoft Word version, so they can actually use the document themselves and simply go to their lawyer and just make sure it fits their needs. But it basically gives the person the contract they need plus all the background to get started.
Well, it sounds like an excellent prize.
Yeah.
So to win this book, The Better Agreements, just click the Better Agreements button on the broadcast page. So you can scroll down to the page, why should you buy this book, and I'd like you to list the 4 reasons that you should buy that book. And the first person to give us that answer will be the winner, and we will announce that winner next broadcast. Now, before we close our tonight, I'd like to suggest that you could join the MT Coach community and send us your feedback and get on our list for emails to keep up to date. And I would like to also remind our people to tune in next week and to visit the MT Coach for the replays. And next week we're going to be discussing how to find and keep great associates. And that should be an excellent broadcast to tune into.
Well, I'm really looking forward to that one, Jim, because of course that's when we turn the tables and I get to interview you. And as you know, I've been reviewing your book, and it's an excellent book. I'm looking forward to it. It really gets into the nuts and bolts of the next step. Is what we're talking about tonight is getting financially clear on what you need to make an agreement, and your book outlines very well how to recruit, how to find good associates, how to keep them in your clinic, how to decrease turnover, which is a major problem. So I'm very excited to be able to interview you on that topic next week.
Well, thank you, Don, and I'm certainly looking forward to the time on the Internet next week. So at this point, I'm going to say goodnight to everyone, and we will announce our winner for tonight next week, and I hope you can join us. Good night, and good luck, and thank you very much, Don.
Thanks, Jim.
Good night.